Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Calls One Planet series. The North Atlantic right whale is one of the planet's most endangered species. There are believed to be fewer than 400 left. This would be the first large whale in modern history that would go extinct. Right whales are mostly found along the Atlantic coast of North America. Scientists say the main threat to their survival is millions of lobster lines that stretch from New England up through Atlantic Canada. Whales are also hit by ships, but 85% of the right whale population bears scars that indicate entanglement injuries. Over the past 3 years, 31 North Atlantic right whales were found dead in the United States and Canada. The new documentary Entangled chronicles efforts to protect right whales from extinction, the impacts of those efforts on the lobster industry, and how the National Marine Fisheries Service has struggled to balance the vying interests. Here is the trailer for the new documentary Entangled.
The right whale is an extraordinary creature. It's really one of the wonders of the living world. But if something in our management doesn't change, the direction of the population points to zero, and that's extinction.
The North Atlantic right whale is considered one of the most endangered species on the planet.
This would be the first large whale in modern history that would go extinct.
Of the right whale population now bears scars that indicate entanglement injury. This was a big problem, and it's an urgent problem.
It's a tragedy that we're losing the right whales. It's emblematic of large-scale changes that are happening on the planet.
Human beings can't exist without biodiversity, and this is maybe a harbinger of where we're going.
We need to put as much pressure as we can on the agency to step up and take action right now.
I don't think the urgency can be overstated.
Human action is killing these whales, and human action has the ability to save them.
Lobstermen are stewards of the sea, and they don't want to entangle anything.
I sat here and listened to environmentalist after environmentalist tell me what a murderous individual I am.
My opinion about the whales, what more can we do? Eventually, they're going to die off. It's going to happen no matter what.
As your governor, I will do everything I can to defend Maine's lobster industry in the face of this absurd federal overreach.
The challenge is to find ways for the fishing industry and the right whales to coexist in the same waters.
NOAA is the fox scouting the chicken coop. You're going to be fired for being a liar and a person who works to kill off the right whale.
One of the problems is that fisheries are one of the main factors that are endangering protected species. You end up with one organization deeply conflicted with its mission.
And that is the trailer for the new documentary, Entangled. The International Ocean Film Festival is screening Entangled online from October 21st to the 26th. They're hosting a live stream Q&A with today's guest, Entangled director David Abel, on Monday, October 26th at 6 p.m. Pacific time. And you can find ticket information at yourcallradio.org. David Abel is an award-winning reporter who covers fisheries and environmental issues for the Boston Globe. He also directed the films Sacred Cod, The Fight for the Future of America's Oldest Fishery, and Lobster War, The Fight Over the World's Richest Fishing Grounds. Hi, David. Welcome back to the show, and thank you so much for making another important documentary. It's really an amazing film.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me back. I really appreciate it, and it's good to talk to you again.
Well, it's great to have you again. And this film really does kind of go in line with the themes of your past shows. Why did you decide to make a film specifically about efforts to save the right whale and how that's affecting the lobster industry?
Well, there are a variety of answers to that question. And yes, this is sort of like perhaps the final part of a trilogy of films about New England fisheries and how climate change is affecting them. But I think what really motivated this film was a report last year by the United Nations that found about a million species are likely to go extinct by the end of this century. And when I read that number, I was really floored, and it just seemed astonishing and also hard to fathom. It's just such a big number that it was so hard to wrap my head around. And I was thinking, how do you tell the story about such a abstract and horrific number, a horrific loss of biodiversity? And I thought that perhaps the best way to do that was to tell the story of one species, and here in New England, a particularly iconic one. The North Atlantic right whale is on the license plates in Massachusetts, where I live, and it's just a really well-known species. And so while making my last film, Lobster War, I started to learn a lot more about the impacts of the of this effort to conserve and protect a species with what's believed to be fewer than 400 individuals left and fewer than 100 breeding females left, and what is an iconic industry, what's the most valuable fishery in North America, the lobster fishery. And as I started to learn more about that, I learned about this effort to try to protect them that was causing all kinds of conflict here. And so that's really what led me to think that a deeper look at this issue was important. And it's something I've been chronicling in a piecemeal fashion for a number of years as a reporter at the Boston Globe. And I thought a broader, deeper narrative was in order. And that's why I made this film.
Were you involved with some of the filming? I mean, there's so many close-up shots of these beautiful right whales. Were you that close to them?
Yes, I actually shot most of the film, but some of the closest shots of the whales, although I did get quite close to them on some occasions on research boats, but we were able to get closer with drones. And we had other folks shooting for us. In some cases, some of the imagery comes from scientists who have permission to shoot pretty close. But it's actually against the law, because they're an endangered species, to get too close to a right whale. You need special permission from the federal government to actually fly a drone below a certain distance of a right whale, and it's actually illegal to be in the water with them. And we initially, as we started making this film, had hoped to be able to go underwater and shoot underwater imagery of the whales, and unfortunately it violates the Endangered Species Act to do that. So some of the footage that we do show of the whales underwater had to come from Canada. And there's very little of that footage available because it's very difficult to get that close to them, even if it were illegal, and is also pretty dangerous.
Right. Well, the footage you got, I mean, it's really just incredible. The right whales have been through so much because they have been hunted for more than 1,000 years.
Indeed, yes. And so, sadly, you know, their greatest predator, whether it's willful or not, has been us. And so for generations before the 20th century or the early part of the 20th century, there was a huge hunting trade for right whales. When the Pilgrims first arrived in the United States, their diary items from some of the folks coming over in the boat showing huge amounts of whales spotted in Cape Cod Bay, and there are believed to have been thousands of North Atlantic right whales before they were hunted. And by the time of the hunting of whales was banned in the early part of the 20th century, I think it was in the 1930s that they were ultimately banned. There were believed to be only a few hundred left, and those numbers slowly started to bounce back. But then we have been killing them in other ways and not intentionally. But sadly, the whales, I think nearly all of the whales that have died in the last decade or so have been found dead to be they've been found dead as a result of human activity. And the vast majority of those have died as a result of entanglements in fishing gear or ship strikes.
And we'll talk about that in a minute. But one more question about right whales. They swim 1,700 miles between St. Lawrence in Canada and Florida. What else can you tell us about right whales? What have you learned about them over the course of your filming?
They're magnificent creatures. They can grow to the size of a school bus. Mm-hmm. They have incredibly sophisticated ways of navigating through the world. They and they're incredibly powerful. They can drag fishing gear for thousands of miles. Mm-hmm. And they're just a beautiful species to watch. I recall being on a research vessel in the earlier parts of when we were filming on Cape Cod Bay, which is one of their primary feeding grounds, and I felt like I was in a show. And all around the boat, these incredibly beautiful and powerful creatures just breached out of the ocean, and there were these giant splashes, and you could see some of them had calves, newly born calves with them. Mm-hmm. And it's just a really amazing thing. They're also known as the urban whale. And what makes them increasingly vulnerable to us is they tend to feed pretty close to shore. And it's not that uncommon that you can find them swimming just offshore. And some of the footage we have in the film was shot from shore because they were so close. So that just makes them in the crosshairs, so to speak, of us and how we live. And that involves the gear we set, our fishermen set, and often the traffic that comes to and from ports of larger vessels, mainly.
What do right whales eat?
So they eat a rice-sized form of plankton called Calanus finmarchicus. And they are really, really small. And what's amazing about these creatures is how big they are, and yet they feed on such small beings. But what they but where they find them, there are thousands or millions of these what are known as blooms, plankton blooms, and they rise from the lower parts of the ocean. And the right whales are known as baleen whales, which means that they don't have teeth, but they're sort of like filters in their mouth, and when they're feeding, they turn on their side and open their mouth and just bring in thousands and thousands of these rice-sized creatures, which is enough to produce these massive whales.
In the film, we learn that because of climate change, the waters are getting warmer. And as a result, we're seeing a huge decline in this energy-rich Calenus, 30 to 90% decline.
Right. And that is and that's the frightening thing. And that is also in part, you know, what we can be blamed for this species decline. So what's been happening is as our waters here off of New England, the Gulf of Maine, have been warming, and they're believed to be warming faster than almost any other body of water in the ocean. And that has to do with a number of factors, including the Gulf Stream and the changes in the ocean circulation patterns, as well as runoff from rivers into this body of water that stretches from the tip of Cape Cod up through Nova Scotia. But what we've found in recent years is that that warming is likely to have been driving a collapse of some of these crucial Calenus populations, and specifically in one part of the Gulf of Maine known as the Bay of Fundy, which runs up through Atlantic Canada. The populations of these small creatures have plummeted by as much as 90% this summer. And so traditionally, for as long as scientists have been studying right whales, there has been a large population of right whales in the Bay of Fundy during the time of these Calenus blooms, specifically in the summer. And in recent years, that the number of right whales found there has declined because the population of Calenus has declined. And this summer, for the first time in since scientists have been studying them, they found no right whales there. Mm-hmm. And the problem isn't just the lack of food, but the fact that the whales have had to look elsewhere for the food. And so what has happened in the last few years, specifically in the last 3 years, the whales that would usually spend their summers feeding in the Bay of Fundy have swum north to the Gulf of St. Lawrence in Canada off of the Acadian coast of New Brunswick. And as a result of that that movement, they have died in greater numbers. And the problem has been that unlike in the Gulf of Maine, where people and fishermen have been living with the whales for a long time and are well aware of the conservation concerns, the Canadians had no experience and no real regulations to deal with a large number of whales. And so in 2017, 12 right whales died in the Gulf of St. Lawrence, which was catastrophic for a species with such a small population. And last year, last summer in 2019, we saw 9 of 10 right whales die in the Gulf of St. Lawrence, which again was a catastrophic blow to a species that is heading, unfortunately, on a trajectory that looks like they could be extinct within 20 or 30 years, functionally extinct at least.
Today, we are speaking with David Abel, who's director of the new documentary Entangled. It chronicles efforts to protect North Atlantic right whales from extinction and the impacts of those efforts on the lobster industry. The International Ocean Film Fest is screening Entangled online from October 21st through the 26th. They're hosting a live stream Q&A with David on Monday, October 26th at 6 p.m. That's next Monday. If you have any questions for David about his film and what he found about the right whales, where the lobster industry fits in all of this, the National Marine Fisheries Service is struggling to balance these interests, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. David, at the end of your film, someone said that in 2020, the number of right whales is most likely below 400. How do scientists know that?
That's a great question. And it's any estimate of their population is just that. It's an estimate. So it is not incredibly easy to count a species that spends most of its time underwater. However, this is because of its small population and because of its feeding patterns and because of an incredibly sophisticated array of scientists that have been studying this animal for decades now. There is a close amount of observation, at least there was before the pandemic. The population count, which will actually be released later this month, will probably be less certain than maybe in previous years because the surveillance network that usually tracks the whales had to take a lot of time off this year because of the pandemic. But there are federal officials that fly over their feeding grounds and their breeding grounds in special low-flying and slow-flying planes by NOAA, and there are all kinds of vessels that where scientists take pictures of them, and there's a whole catalog of species. The New England Aquarium here in Boston has an incredibly detailed database that provides information for every single whale that is known. And we also can pretty closely track the births. So we know roughly the size of the population, and we know how many are born. And we know that because there are only a certain number of breeding females every year that show up in the breeding grounds, which are off the coast of Georgia and northern Florida. And during that period, there's the whales are pretty closely tracked, and the scientists are counting them. So this year, counting the calves that are born and the whales that make their way down there. And this year there were 10 right whale calves that were born, which was better than the last few years. In 2018, so in 2017, we lost 17 right whales, which was a record as far as we know, since there's been a close accounting of known whale deaths. And then in 2018, there was an unprecedented zero births of right whales, which was seen as similarly catastrophic and actually sort of potentially foreboding about the future trajectory of the species. And I'm happy to talk more about that. But the entanglement in fishing gear isn't just a threat to live whales, but it's a threat to the ability of breeding females to have sufficient energy and fat to give birth to new whales. And so while 10 this year was seen as better than in previous years, scientists suggest that for the population to avoid extinction, they need to be producing 30 right whales every year. And adding insult onto injury this year, two of the calves that were born this year have already died. Oh. One of those whales died within hours after being born, after being hit by a vessel in the breeding grounds off the coast of Georgia. And another one was found dead off the coast of New York this summer. So there are all kinds of headwinds facing the species.
Wow. Well, we're going to take a quick break, but I would love for you after the break just to talk about the world that these calves are being born in. They're dealing with the lobster lines, they're dealing with ships, they're dealing with plastic. It's just so much that these calves have to deal with. Today, we are joined by David Abel, a Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter at the Boston Globe and director of the new documentary Entangled, which chronicles efforts to protect right whales from extinction and the impacts of those efforts on the lobster industry. You can see the film online. The International Ocean Film Festival is screening it from October 21st to the 26th, and David will take part in a Q&A on October 26th at 6 p.m. Pacific. You can find information at yourcallradio.org. This is Your Calls One Planet, and we'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Today, we are joined by David Abel, Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter at the Boston Globe and director of an incredible new documentary, Entangled. It chronicles efforts to protect right whales from extinction. There are less than 400 left, and scientists say if fisheries management does not change, right whales could go extinct within just a few decades. You can see Entangled online thanks to the International Ocean Film Fest, October 21st through the 26th. And then there will be a Q&A with David on October 26th at 6 p.m. If you have any questions for David about what he found about right whales, about the lobster industry, we'll also talk about that in a minute, and just really talk about these lobster traps and what happens when they go down to the ocean floor and how these lines entangle the whales. You can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. David, some of the most amazing footage in the film is seeing the calves with their moms. So can you just tell us, what kind of world are these calves entering? I mean, they've got so many obstacles.
Yeah, it's sort of hard to fathom what it must be like navigating this incredibly treacherous environment for these whales that, again, tend to swim relatively close to shore. And that world includes pleasure craft, all kinds of fast-moving motorboats, huge tankers, and in the waters off of New England, particularly, a network of millions of ropes, fishing lines, and those that are the most dangerous for them. There are a variety that present dangers, but the ones that really are most dangerous are the lines that the lobstermen here use that stretch from the surface to the sea floor. They're called vertical buoy lines, and there are a huge number of these all over the Gulf of Maine. Lobstermen here each fish 800 or so traps, and that doesn't mean that each of them have 800 lines, but they lines that go from the surface to the seafloor, because sometimes they connect the traps in what are called trawl lines. But to make a long story short, this is sort of like a minefield for these whales. And the dangers for them is that when they are swimming through the water column, they have these massive flippers. And this danger is not just posed to North Atlantic right whales. It's also for humpback whales, pilot whales, fin whales, other whales, but North Atlantic right whales, because of their anatomy and these massive flippers that they have on the their bottom, it's particularly dangerous for them, because what happens is that when they hit these lines, they have this instinctive response to roll, and when they roll, the line actually tends to entangle them even more, and in some cases when these whales, the other challenge for them is that, as I mentioned earlier, when they feed with their mouth wide open. And so what can happen is, and happens all too often, and we actually just saw evidence of this week, they can get the whale lodged in their mouth, and it's incredibly difficult to get it to dislodge it, because it then gets sort of stuck into their skin, and it can't be removed, even though there are these incredibly brave folks who have learned how to disentangle whales. Those are really difficult to disentangle, those that have the lines in their mouth. We just saw last week reports off the coast of New Jersey of another newly born whale, in this case a 4-year-old, that was the offspring of another whale that earlier this year, I think it was in February, a whale known as Dragon was found severely entangled and so poorly, in such poor health that it was considered swimming while dead. Mm. And so in addition to the loss of 31 whales in the last 3 or so years, we now have about a dozen right whales that have been found to be entangled or swimming while dead, and they're essentially believed to, you know, be either dead now or on the cusp of death.
It was so tragic to learn about these entanglements. You spoke with people who do marine mammal rescue operations, and they said that it's rare to not have a whale that has some evidence of entanglement. They start thrashing around when they're entangled. The line can embed over the blowhole, and that'll impact the whale's ability to breathe. The lines can cut through their skin, their blubber and muscle, and cut directly into the bone. They also said that even if it's not immediately lethal, we talked about this earlier, this can decrease their ability to carry their calves to term. So these line entanglements are just so brutal.
Yeah, right. And we only know, sadly, of the deaths that we find. And they're believed to be, for every whale that's found dead, another whale that's never found, that just sinks to the bottom. And so, so we don't really know, how many whales we've lost in recent years. We only know of the whales that have been found dead. So these entanglements are very challenging to this species. They're believed, as you mentioned at the top, now I think the latest statistic I've seen is an estimated 86% of right whales have been entangled at least once. And I think at least half of those have been entangled twice. Mm. Some of them have been entangled as many as 8 times. It's a really significant challenge for this species.
And if we can all visualize for a minute what this looks like underwater, there are 3.5 million lobster traps at any one time in the Gulf of Maine. And so that means there are hundreds of thousands of lines in the water.
That's right.
Wow. So that's just, there's so much line. We've got a question from a listener about just the connection between what we eat and what is happening here. Let's go to Maria in Berkeley. Hi, Maria. Welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you. We in Berkeley are foodists, and so the people in the know say that we shouldn't be eating anything unless it's farm-raised in glacier-melting Norwegian waters, because there is so much plastic and mercury and it bioaccumulates. So wouldn't you agree that if we do a massive campaign for the good of all of the fish-eating human population and against the red lobster and all the big commercial greed that is driving this overfishing and lobsters are bottom eaters, so they're even more polluted. And so it's a luxury item, and it's really, I believe, a racism, a speciesism, just because we have the technology to decimate and to put more zeros after the billionaires, that all of these things are happening. And I'll take my comment off the air.
Thank you, Maria. David, what are your thoughts?
Well, one thing in terms of trying to, I'm not sure exactly how to respond to the question, but or comment, but I'll try to answer it this way. So there is this organization known as the Marine Stewardship Council, which certifies whether species are considered sustainable to eat. And there are there are a variety of species that have been certified and then lost that certification. And just this summer, the lobster industry has lost certification as considered sustainable by the MSC or the Marine Stewardship Council, and that was a blow to this fishing industry, but reflective of the dangers that that the fishing industry poses to North Atlantic right whales. And you know, just on the question of plastics and other issues other pollution that we introduced to the ecosystem, there's no question that could be providing a danger to right whales. But that wasn't the focus of my film, and I worry about speaking beyond my knowledge about that.
Well, thank you for calling in, Maria. To Maria's comment about red lobster, for example, we learn in the film that in 2019, Maine's lobster industry had its fourth most lucrative year. And of course, they got hit by COVID. Can you just tell us, where are most of these lobsters sold?
Well, I think most of them are sold to restaurants. And that was one of the reasons why the lobster industry, which here in the Gulf of Maine has had challenges and also successes. So my last film, Lobster War, looked at the impact of climate change on lobster, and what we were able to learn was that south of Cape Cod, in the southern part of New England, stretching into the mid-Atlantic, the lobster population has collapsed because the waters have warmed to such a degree that lobsters can only survive in a relatively narrow band of temperatures. And we've seen a 90% decline in the lobster catch in those waters. But because those waters are warming further to the north, in the areas like I was describing near the Bay of Fundy, where we've seen a collapse of the Calanus population or the food that right whales eat, we've actually seen an explosion of the lobster population over the past decade, which scientists attribute to the warming waters, in that the waters have now reached a sweet spot for them. And that explosion in their population has led to huge catch increases. So in recent years, we've seen the lobster catch in just the state of Maine rise to more than 100 million pounds. And I think the record was something like 133 million pounds in 2016. And it's hovered near that. Last year, it was, I think, closer to 120 million pounds. So there's been a significant catch, and those lobsters are sold mainly in the United States. I think the most lucrative part of the business goes to restaurants, which is why when many restaurants closed this past spring, it was a huge hit to the lobster industry. But there's also frozen lobster. And in recent years, there's been a rise in the amount of lobster that's exported, particularly to Asia and China. And as a result of the trade war that our President Donald Trump has launched against China in recent years, that trade had collapsed as all of a sudden the price of lobster increased substantially and there were fewer buyers. So that in recent months, I believe, has changed a little bit as there are new measures and there's been efforts to try to reduce that conflict.
Right. And so they got hit really hard by COVID.
Oh, yeah. The lobstermen really were hit hard. But in recent months, as more restaurants have opened, the industry has bounced back. So my understanding is that the catch and lobster sales over the summer did quite well. We'll see how that proceeds into the fall, which is a significant time for harvesting lobsters.
You have some really interesting footage of a meeting to talk about all of this among government officials, environmentalists, and lobster fishermen. And they all came together to express their views. And in the end, they voted for a 60% reduction in lines. But once the word got out about that, a number of fishermen and their families, fisherwomen, revolted. And it was so interesting to learn that Maine politicians across the board, even progressives, went to one of their rallies and said they opposed those regulations.
Right. So we saw, and we thought this was going to be the end of the film. As we were making the film, we started to follow this regulatory process known as the Atlantic Large Whale Take Reduction Team. And that's a mouthful of a body of folks that come together through the Endangered Species Act or the Marine Mammal Protection Act. And the goal of this group is to try to reduce harm to these whales. And as you said, it includes regulators, federal regulators, state regulators. It includes fishermen, lobstermen, and conservationists and scientists. And so there are something like 60 or so members of this group, and they've taken piecemeal action for years. But this year, as we've seen the death toll rise sharply in the last few years and the births decline substantially, and deep fears about the ability for this species to stave off extinction, there was a substantial effort to try to do something. And so over a course of months last year, there were a variety of meetings, and they resulted in this take reduction team known as the TRT coming up with a plan to cut the number of lobster lines by almost half throughout the Gulf of Maine. And that was considered historic action. Mm. It was I think all but one person on this body voted in favor of these actions, and that included a lot of the lobstermen in Maine. And no one can say for sure what happened after that vote, which again is when that happened. We thought, oh, great, we have this beautiful ending, happy ending of the film. And what ended up happening, as we see unfold later in the film, is that there was a backlash, and a lot of the lobstermen, particularly in Maine, were enraged that this proposal could severely affect them. And so that led to the governor, a bipartisan backlash, including the now Democratic governor of Maine and the Republican and independent senators of Maine, as well as the other congressmen in Maine, all unanimously calling on the Trump administration to oppose these regulations. And so as these regulations went through public comment, they have yet to actually come to fruition. And so so more than a year and a half after this process started and seemingly ended with this near unanimous proposal to take what would have been historic measures to protect these whales, there has been no regulatory response. And there has the federal government has said that they would issue these regulations repeatedly, and they have repeatedly delayed them. And my understanding is that there are a series of draft regulations that emerge throughout this bureaucratic process that are now at the White House, and nobody knows exactly whether or when they will emerge. And over the summer, President Trump went to Maine and sat down with lobstermen, and essentially, after hearing from them, promised not to do anything that would harm the lobster industry. So it doesn't seem like we're going to see much action until at least after the election, or until a new administration comes into power.
And like your last film, Lobster War, we know that livelihoods are at stake. Entire communities rely on this industry. What was really interesting is in Lobster War, because of climate change, there were no more lobster to catch. And I remember one man you interviewed eventually became a woodworker. I mean, they obviously had to find other areas to bring in income, other sources of income. Is the government doing anything on that front in this area to say, you know, we have to obviously protect these whales, and a 60% reduction in lines would mean until the technology improves, and we can talk about that in a minute, to not have any line at all, ropeless fishing, there's got to be alternatives. Is that getting much attention in the areas where you filmed?
In some respects. So yeah, that is one of the more moving moments in that film, in our film Lobster War, where a former lobsterman says he can no longer catch the fish, so he now sculpts them, and he's a sculptor. And in this case, throughout much of the Gulf of Maine, unlike what happened in Connecticut, where that lobsterman was from, there's still a robust fishery. So we're not at the point where we need to provide subsidies to fishermen, although the federal government, in the wake of the pandemic, has provided hundreds of million dollars to fishermen around the country, and quite a bit of that will end up with the lobstermen. But specifically on the question of what the federal government can do to sort of try to square the circle, if that's the expression, to protect both the fishermen and in this case the lobstermen, in this case the whales, there is this idea. Well, it's far more than an idea, and I don't want to preempt your next question, but there is a potential solution here, and that solution has received some federal support, but will likely require a lot more federal support. And in short, the chief threat to the whales, as we've discussed, are these things called vertical buoy lines, the waters that rise from the bottom of the ocean where the traps are kept to the surface where the buoys are, and that the lobstermen pull up to collect their traps every few days. And removing that water from the water column is the most important measure that can be taken to protect the whales, according to scientists. And the way to do that is to use a technology that is still that still has a ways to go, but it's called ropeless fishing. And the technology exists, and there are all kinds of different types of ropeless fishing. But essentially, the way it would work and the way it does work in some smaller fisheries is that you can connect in one form of the technology a balloon to the end of the traps, and acoustically through electronic devices, you can activate those balloons to inflate when a fishing boat approaches. And that would provide a means of raising the traps to the surface without using the vertical buoy lines. And there's a lot of concern in the fishing industry that this will be required, and these systems are quite expensive at the moment. So so it's not necessarily practical that you could ask fishermen who are, many of them have been doing well, very cost conscious, and you know, always scraping by as they have to deal with rising prices for bait and rising prices for fuel and all kinds of other expenses that make it very difficult for them to survive. And so it would require some kind of federal subsidy to probably make this work.
Right. And it seems like that would be an incredible solution. We're out of time. But David, thank you again for making another really important and just really incredible documentary. The footage was amazing. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
David Abel is director of the new documentary Entangled. He's an award-winning reporter for the Boston Globe, and I hope you can see this film. It is so, so important. The International Ocean Film Fest is screening Entangled from October 21st through the 26th, and they're hosting a live Q&A with David on Monday, October 26th at 6 p.m. You can find information about how to get tickets at yourcallradio.org. Thanks to Malihe Razazan for producing today's show. Thank you, Kevin Vance, for keeping our studio running, and thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Agu.